Hello and welcome. It's Heartland Hypnosis Radio. My name is Ray Lytle. As always, it's so good to be with you. I'm joined this week by Mr. Brian Powers. How you doing, Brian?
Good. How you doing?
Brian is a longtime stage hypnotist, but more than just being a stage hypnotist, he even though he got into the world of hypnotism and he's helped people and he's been a performer and he's done it for a long time, but also he got into the booking end of hypnotism, which I think is really cool because he has a lot of people in this profession working. He puts them to work, which is amazing, especially when there's so many people out there who don't have an agent. And I'm telling you, I've been in radio a long time, and I've been all over the place, and having an agent is always a good thing. So let's welcome to the program Mr. Brian Powers. How you doing, Brian?
Thank you very much. It's having a good agent is a good thing.
Yes.
Because there's a
yes.
lot of agents that are out there that are not so good.
Trust me, I've also had bad ones.
Hurt your career. You've been in the business long enough, you probably run across some of those as well.
I've had some bad ones as well. But when you get a good one, it's nice, you know. I want to let's talk about you first. You grew up in Missouri.
Okay.
And
yes.
you got into hypnosis. You were pretty young.
Well, I got into entertainment young.
Yeah,
I got into, in high school, I was really involved in a lot of electronics, and I was always a gadget guy. I liked to take things apart and see how they worked. So I built a couple oversized color organs, and you connect the music to it, and the lights jump around and dance and turn on and off and everything else. And a buddy of mine was in radio in St. Louis, and he got involved with a thing called the Coca-Cola music machine that was kind of big in the early 70s, and it was basically these DJs going out and doing locations, and they were doing DJ stuff, dances and everything else, but they didn't have lighting or gear. So I started building some lighting and stuff, and so kind of formed a little company in 1975, I guess,
and
started doing DJing myself.
How old were you?
For a number of years.
How old were you when you formed that company?
17 years old, you know? Yeah. But to me, it was fun. It wasn't really work. And my other buddies were going to work, getting part-time jobs in grocery stores and restaurants and stuff like that. And I was, I could go out and work one night a week. Usually a Saturday night, I'd get a wedding or something. And I would make more in that 3 or 4 hour period of time than they would make all week long.
So you were
it through high school.
You were programming lights. You were programming lights to music. And you would, this is in the 70s. I mean, this is,
yeah,
well before any of this stuff was going on. And as a high school kid, you figured this stuff out. And anybody who's ever seen anything like this, it's so visual, as well as because it's music, you know what I mean? It's something you could dance to and stuff.
Yeah.
But, boy, that's real. I mean, that's amazing for a kid that young to be able. I'm 50. I couldn't do it now. But to be that young and figure it out is really something.
Well, it was just fun to me. It wasn't work. It was never work. So it was just fun, and then I got paid for it. And then I had to grow up and get a real job, and then moved out of the entertainment industry and everything else, and did restaurant work for a number of years and kind of got sick and tired of that. I was down in Florida, moved back to Missouri, and ran across this opportunity to get involved with this entertainment agency that a guy had. He didn't really know what to do with it. He wasn't booking very many events. He'd probably book about his top year, he'd do about 60 events in a year. And so I thought it had some potential there and kind of liked it. So made him an offer and bought the business from him and started having my own entertainment agency and started booking DJs because I was familiar with that, and bands and piano players and, companies would call for casino nights and stuff. And just by luck, this agency was based on a big convention property. So we got a lot of convention work. Which is kind of the gravy of the work out there and everything else. So then one day I got a call for a hypnotist, and I'd always seen these guys work, but I never understood it. And I didn't believe it at all. I just thought, man, that's just ridiculous. You can't make these people do this. But I attended shows, and I just couldn't believe this stuff. The stuff that was going on stage and these people and how these hypnotists could work and put these people in states of mind. I mean, it was just so fascinating to me. And I think it took me until about, I know one guy I hired at least 4 times. He was getting, back then, he was getting $2,500 a pop.
That's unbelievable.
So, $10,000. And I'm sitting there writing his checks out going, this guy has made more money in the last hour and a half than I'm going to make all week. I'm giving 80% of my revenue to this other guy.
Yeah.
I'm getting the calls, and I'm like, you know, it took me a little while to figure out I got to learn how to do this stuff. So I started reading and doing shows in 1992.
Oh, wow. So you learned hypnotism from a book?
From a book and just watching the guys do it.
Really?
And I didn't have any formal training. I didn't know NGH existed. I didn't know any of these things existed out there. I mean, after I did them for a while, then I went and, you know, got certifications and stuff like that. But at first, I was just self-taught. I read a bunch of books, and, you know, the biggest thing was I was comfortable on stage. I didn't have a fear of being in front of people, and I think that's got to be the toughest thing for somebody that doesn't come from a background to get up in front of 300 people and do this thing, you know, because that's nerve-wracking, you know.
Well, it's right, because a lot of people can induce, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're an entertainer. You're an entertainer. You know what I mean?
It's exactly.
You can hypnotize someone, but you can't necessarily entertain unless you have that certain something.
There's a big difference. And I know the first couple NGH conferences I went to, you know, way back in the mid-'78 or 79 or back in there, you know, the clinical guys would always come up to the stage guys and just want to talk to you. How do you do this? How do you get their hand to go up in the air? How do you get, it's like, well, you ask them and they raise their hand. Don't they wake up? No, they never go to sleep first off. I mean, it's just, there's still a big confusion about what goes on stage, what goes on clinical. I mean, this way back then, you know, but, you know, the stage guys were the rock stars. They were the people that, you know, everybody looked up to. The other guys were doing all the real help with the stop smoking and weight loss. And I started getting into that too as well. I opened up a clinic, I ran a clinic for a while. So I did that side of it, but I just really got into it because it just made business sense, you know, to, why give all half, you know, 80% of my revenue away to somebody else that I'm the one with four kids and a wife?
Because you had a booking agency, and obviously you were DJing in the beginning, and then all of a sudden you realize that the big money acts were someone who's doing a great stage hypnotist show. A good stage hypnotist is making this much money. Why wouldn't you at least want to get into that? I mean, I played in bands most of my life. And playing in bands, great. It's an easy thing to book and so on and so forth. But you still have to split that money. When you're a good one-man stage hypnotist and you are able to charge a lot of money, the best thing about it is you don't have a bass player and you don't have a guitarist and you don't have a drummer. So you don't have to split off and pay all these people at the end of the night.
And you don't have the fights between the personalities.
Yes, absolutely.
Gets in a fight with the drummer and walks out, and all of a sudden the band's not the same band anymore, and I've got to book three more times, and I'm like, oh my God, this is going to change, you know. So, yeah.
When you're a one man stage hypnotist, you don't have to worry about your bass player sleeping with the guitarist wife or whatever drama's going on. Yeah. All you have to worry about is whether you are entertaining or not, and whether or not people like you. I mean, that's a pretty nice deal.
Yeah, so it was really just to supplement my income. You know, the agency was going, and that's how I was making my income, you know, booking these different acts and everything else. But, yeah, it made a lot more sense for me to hit some big scores every month and put that to the bottom line. That's what made the company survive, because it's pretty hard booking enough stuff if you're only making 20%, and sometimes not even that. You know, sometimes it's 10% on a job or whatever. I never wanted to lose a job for an entertainer because of my commission.
Right.
So, you know, you like to get that. It, you know, a lot of it also depended on what we had to do with the act. I mean, if it was just a deal, if somebody called me up and said, hey, I'm looking for this kind of band or this kind of act, and it's like, yeah, I can make a phone call and have that happen for you real quick, I don't need to have that much money out of that. But if I'm doing a lot of stuff, and we're not a captive agency. We don't sign exclusives with anybody. We don't keep you out of an area. You know, I work with everybody. I mean, what we kind of developed is the entertainers and performers, they have some needs. You know that, being in a band.
Yeah.
You get to a location, and the stage isn't big enough. The power isn't there. The lighting is terrible. And it's going to all affect your performance. The meeting planner doesn't know all these things to ask, and the facility doesn't always get involved, you know, and stuff. So what happens is that all three of these things collide at the same time, and there's a problem. So we try to be that go-between between the facility, if it's a hotel or a conference center, the buyer who's, you know, running the conference, they're coming in, and that's somebody who's usually way overworked, and they don't know all the questions to ask. And then the entertainer who gets there and finds out that, you know, hey, we got five people in this band. We can't fit on a 4x8 stage. It's not going to happen, you know?
That's exactly why I used, at my biggest, when my band, you know, we would open up for major acts and we'd headline some shows ourselves. And I had a really, successful radio show. And what I used a booker for, that main reason, is it got very uncomfortable for me to have conversations with club owners or promoters, to have those difficult conversations because I didn't want to be confrontational. I noticed when I had a booker, my agent, they took care of everything. They had those rough conversations in the beginning to say, now listen, when we say a backstage area, it needs to be this, they need to contain this, the guy's got to get blah, blah, blah. They worked everything out to where literally I showed up and everything that we wanted was already taken care of. To literally, all I had to do was show up, do the gig, and then go home. And that's, it made it so comfortable. That's why because people all the time would say, people are going to hire you. Why are you getting a booking agent? I'm like, because I don't like having uncomfortable conversations with people who are going to pay me. You know, I want someone else to handle all that stuff.
You don't want to be put in the wrong place just for a slot.
Yes.
You know, that's the other thing, is that they would look to our experience to say, you know, will this band do this, versus just saying, I got to get this band booked three more times this month. And that's why I never wanted to be, you know, I would never want to get in management for a band. I don't want them coming to me and say, Brian, I need four more deals this month, you know, or I'm not going to make the rent. It's like, well, what, dude, that's not my problem, you know. But I'll put you into a venue or a place that you're gonna kill it at, and you're going to be right for it, versus just trying to promote, you know, because you're one of the guys on my roster. I don't really have a roster. I mean, I've got over 4,000 people in my database of entertainers that I've used. And some of them I use a lot a year, and some of them I may not use once every 3 or 4 years. It just depends on when they're appropriate for the convention or the work or whatever's coming up. You know, that's when I'll stick them in there.
Let me ask you that.
I mean, they don't owe me anything unless I make them something. And if I make them something, they pay me something, and it works real well.
Let me ask you about venues, because you deal with, I imagine you deal with all types of venues. I mean, you know, everything from clubs and halls, casinos, whatever, to schools.
Right.
And so these people, they come to you now, or do you still reach out to them? How do you, for the venues or for who do you consider your clients?
Most of the work we get comes from associations and companies that we've dealt with. So it's the Missouri Association of blah, blah, blah. Where, you know, fill in the blank, everything from attorneys to zoologists or whatever. I mean, you know, every state has all these associations. So they will generally get in touch with us because they're coming to one of the properties that, you know, we work quite a bit. The salespeople don't know all the answers to these things, so they will generally refer. You know, when someone comes in and says, hey, you know, we'd like to have a casino party on Tuesday. We'd like to have a little three-piece band, you know, for a cocktail party on Thursday. And Friday, we'd like a comedian or a this or that or a band or, you know, DJ or karaoke, whatever. So the salespeople, because they move from property to property, they don't know all the people in the area, so they'll just say, hey, Brian's got a company. He handles that stuff. So they refer them to us. So we'll come in. So we'll already know the venue and the property and what can go in what room and how long it'll take them to load in and load out and all those things. So when the client's asking us about, well, what would you put in here, you know, we get some background information about them. You know, tell us about your group. Is it male? Is it female? Is it mixed? Are there spouses? You know, is this a group that wants to be really involved and active? Is it a group that wants to sit and watch? You know, how much time are you doing? What did you do last year? What did you do the year before? What's worked well? What hasn't worked well? So we'll go through a whole list of questions and all kinds of things, you know, before we'll even make recommendations on people that we've used in the past. And that way, when we put an act in there, it's going to work, because we're going to know that the age group is right, the environment's right for it, that the hotel or the venue, you know, we have enough time to load in. All those types of things. I was in Kansas City this last weekend. We did a big thing for DECA and 2,000 high school kids.
Wow.
And, you know, some challenges with the convention center there that, you know, we had to work through. But that's why we're there. We work through them, and the client doesn't have to deal with all the little problems here and there that pop up. You know, we took care of all those things for them.
So you do...
That's kind of the main thing.
You do bands, DJs, comedians, hypnotists. I mean, how wide is your spectrum of entertainers?
If you have money, I'll find an act for you. You know, a long time ago, if we just got involved in it, you know, we didn't have a lot of these people and things, but we never turned a show down. And every time somebody threw a problem at us, it made us grow even bigger. So, you know, throw me a problem, I'll solve it for you, but now I've got that in my wheelhouse, and next time somebody calls, I'll know how to get that. The very first time someone called us for a bagpipe player for a funeral, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in the middle of the Ozarks. Where am I going to find a bagpipe player, you know? Contact any fire station. They all have associations
with
bagpipe
players.
That's
right, they know how to get hold of it. Anywhere
in the world, anywhere in the country. If you need a bagpipe player, contact a fire station in your neighborhood. They will know who plays bagpipes.
So you're saying I could call you and say, all right, I could call you and say, I've got 300 realtors. They're coming to town, and I'm wondering if there's any way I want to get a motivating public speaker. I'd like to get a comedian. It's a three-night thing. I'd like to get a comedian one night. Maybe I'd like to get somebody do some public speaking about motivation. And then mm-hmm. I'd like to get a band. You would line up all the entertainment for them.
Yep. We'd put it all together. We'll do production. We'll do sound and lighting if necessary, if the band's, you know, and sometimes it's a lot easier if we set a main stage and then say, like, your band's going to come in or something. And then it's like, all right, this is what we already have on production. Will that work for you? And they're like, yeah, we don't have to carry our sound and lights in. Yep, okay. Then I'll actually, you know, the band will knock some money off because no one likes carrying the gear anyway.
Right,
they just want to come in, plug in, and play. You know,
monitor
that.
How is it currently going? And I'll ask about stage hypnotists in particular mm-hmm. here, because I know a lot of stage hypnotists are listening to this. How is it these days? I mean, how often do you get someone saying, I need someone to entertain these people, but yet, you know, we'd like to have a little talk about motivation or so on and so forth. I mean, a stage hypnotist could do all of it, right? I mean, a good one could do it all.
Well, and that's what I developed a seminar series a while ago because, again, I was doing the shows, and the shows are fun. But then people would come up and say, well, how does this work? Well, it works by this, and so I was giving these explanations and everything else. So a little play off my name, I came up with a seminar called The Power of Words off of Brian Powers. And so what I do now for corporate groups is I'll come in on, say, the Friday night, and just as the conference opens, and I'll do my stage show. And then the Saturday morning, which is always that hard spot to fill to get people, you know, into those morning meetings, I'll do opening keynote, and I'll talk about what happened the night before, how this worked, how I got Bill to think he was, you know, a ballerina dancer up there, or how Nancy, you know, couldn't remember her name, or, you know, any of the number of the skits. But so I break it down, and a lot of it just gets down to building rapport. You know, I can't make anybody do anything on stage. Nobody else can either.
Right.
But if you build the rapport with the people and make suggestions, they're going to follow them. And that's literally all it is. So the show sets up all the things they want to talk about in the talk and then how they can use that. And, you know, there's a huge problem with communication, how we communicate these days, and cell phones and text messages. You know, you send a message out and all of a sudden somebody's like biting your head off. I'm like, why are they so mad? Well, it's what you said. Well, what did I say? Well, you said it like that. It's like it was a text message. I didn't mean it that way. Well, that's the way I took it. So there's so many problems in communication that a lot of times what you say is not what people hear. And so that's kind of my point of view is, you know, show people how to communicate clearly, build rapport, listen, you know, listen, 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 because they're telling you, but we always get these answers in our head. You know, we want to jump to conclusions. Oh, I know what they want to know. I'll give them this answer. You know, we don't listen to the whole conversation all the way through to find out, you know, what are they really asking? What do they really know? And there's a lot of problem in sales and stuff like that. So I work with groups and companies that, you know, want to educate and entertain their audiences on how to build rapport and make more money. And so that's the other side of it. So what I try to do on myself is capture the entertainment spot and then the keynote spot. If I'm there, I might as well pick up two paychecks instead of one.
I have been in radio for a long time, you know, and mm-hmm. I there's a part of radio is your sales staff, and it's media mm-hmm. sales. It's the ever-changing world of media sales. But in the time I've been there, more than once, the companies that I worked for have had sales gatherings where they bring in someone to talk to the sales department, and it's obviously it's hypnosis, but we're not going to hypnotize you and make you a better salesperson. But they've had a focus and motivational, things where the salespeople get together and they bring in a person to work with them. Is that something that you would mm-hmm. book? Is that something that you book as well?
Yeah. Yeah, like I have all kinds of, different people that are just motivational or educational or whatever. So through the years of doing all these shows, I've produced over 8,400 shows in the last 25 years. So, I mean, literally, as simple as somebody needed a face painter or a balloon twister to a piano player to a casino party to national acts to, we used to do some national acts way back. It just gets to be a pain. Right. The higher up the celebrity status goes, the more they want, and you're picking out green M&Ms, and you're doing this, and putting special towels out for them, and oh my gosh, I mean, it's like, really? These were kind of acts that had been there and done it, and they were right. on their way down, just because the corporate budgets are not as big as they used to be, and they're definitely even shrunking now. But, I said it was just a lot of, oh my gosh, what a pain in the butt stuff, so we didn't get into too much of that, but if someone comes up and says, listen, I've got a $50,000 budget. I'm looking for this, this, and this. What can you get me? I'll give them a list of people that'll burn up $50,000, and I'll be happy to put the show together for them.
Oh, it's amazing what artists you can get if you have the money. And by the way, you'd be surprised at what some people would take if you offer the money. So how is the hypnotism field for stage hypnotists? Is the demand, is it waning? Is it growing? Where are we currently?
I think there's always a good demand for good entertainment. Mm-hmm. The problem with, I think, our field and entertainment out there in hypnosis is there's a lot of people that are cross-trained from this to that, or they're still trying to find themselves. So it's like, well, those guys look like they're having fun and making a lot of money. I'll jump into that. And they take a weekend course somewhere, and they try to get out there and do it. And they don't have the training. They don't have the experience. And the show doesn't come off very well. And then people go, well, yeah, we had one of those one time, and it wasn't very good. And I tell people, I said, well, have you ever heard a band that wasn't really good? Oh, yeah. But you've listened to other bands, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so they're not all the same, right? Well, I guess not. But for some reason, everybody thinks that every hypnosis show is all the same. And it's, that it's totally wrong. It's the hypnotist personality, how they craft the show, how they put it together. So there's always room for good entertainers, unique entertainers. So my advice to the hypnotists out there, and I'll be speaking at the conference this time, is to get yourself good, unique, and do the things that matter, because you don't want to just be a copy of somebody else. You got to figure out your personality and your style, and everybody has a different one. Just like bands. I mean, all bands, all singers, they're not the same. So if you're good, there's work out there.
Let me ask you about stage hypnotism and content. William Mitchell, who's throwing Heartland Hypnosis Conference, and I think the world of William, is a good friend.
Oh, yeah.
But also, he is, his website is... clean hypnosis shows. I mean, William is also a pastor. And so
right.
he works a certain type of show. There's not going to be any swearing in his show. There's not going to be any,
right.
any content that is, could even be thought of as adult. However, there are some guys, that can provide an R-rated stage hypnosis show. When it comes to that, Is that stuff outlined? And when you're talking to people, do they say, "Yeah, I want give me somebody who's funny." However, I want them to be clean, or let's get it's an adult group. We have a bunch of guys, a bunch of people over 30. They're going to be drinking. I'd like to get some R-rated stuff. I mean, how important is the content when booking one of these acts?
it's real important. It's real important that the agent knows, you know, what the act is about. Like comedians, because most of the work we do is corporate work. You can be funny, but you can't be cruel or pull somebody out. If you go to a comedy club as an individual, you know they're going to get picked on. That's just the way the game's played there. But when you're attending a conference, you don't want to be picked out, singled out, or whatever. So it's a whole different group of people in different shows. And I always make sure that if I hire, you know, a comedian or a hypnotist, and they do both roles, they do comedy clubs, and we don't really book in comedy clubs. That's a different type of thing. We really stay in the corporate world. In the corporate world, yeah, it doesn't fly to make fun of someone or really signal somebody out or language. It's not tolerated at all, and it's even, you know, more proper now. Everybody's getting crazy about anything you say. But, yeah, you have to know the content and how that person's going to deliver, because there are different markets. And if you want to just stay in the club market and do the bars and the casinos and stuff, that's a whole different market. I have probably only done two or three clubs ever in my life. My show is more closer to Williams, probably, just because that's what I do, the corporate world. And that way I don't work it into mine. It's not part of the lines. It's not part of the bits. And I don't go there. Now, if someone brings something up or says something, you know, that's not my fault. And you're never quite know what someone will say.
You know, and nowadays, politics, if people are so divided, and politically, I do a radio show, and I know how it is. And while having this discussion, we're certainly not taking any sides. But I'm saying, and I know that people are so afraid of it. You don't want to do anything to do with politically. However, from a comedy standpoint, say somebody calls you, and I don't even know these groups exist. Say there's a group of conservative, some kind of Republican group having a convention.
Yeah.
And they say, yeah, hey, we want you to get a – could you bring in a stage hypnotist? It would be funny – I think it would be funny if the person could hypnotize someone into thinking, boy, you think that Hillary Clinton is great. And knowing that the audience is going to be like, that the person you're hypnotizing is someone that doesn't really think that. I would see there'd be comedy and something like that, or vice versa. Like you're a liberal group of whatever, and you're going to hypnotize someone, and they think that Trump is fantastic. I am surprised that people don't try to do some comedy like that. I understand, but you're not dealing with. I'm saying that hypnotists could do something more than a stand-up. A stand-up would have to take a side, where I think a hypnotist, a hypnotist would not be taking a side. Their subject would, and I'm interested if anybody would even try something like that. Would you stay away from something like that from booking it, or you know, would that be something that you try?
I think I would try it, but with the caveat that, you know, I don't know what's going to come out of that person's mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell them something that, oh, you're the biggest supporter, the biggest Trump supporter, you're the biggest Obama supporter, whatever. And I mean, the funny thing is if they flip, and they are, and their friends would go, oh my God, that's so crazy, you know, and that really convinces them. But it may not work either.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and the tough thing is that, you know, we're doing these things live, and you're doing it with people that you've never done it with before, and so it's their interpretation of what you're saying.
Yeah, and when it comes to hypnotism, it would be their interpretation of what they perceive as a Trump fan or a Hillary Clinton fan as to how they act, which I think brings even more comedy to it. But I understand the controversy involved in it.
Because they're playing a part then.
Yes.
So if they weren't a Trump supporter, they would say, well, this is the way a Trump supporter.
Absolutely.
You know, I'd have to have a hat, and I would have to. So it would be interesting to see how many things, mannerisms that they picked up in what they did. And, it can, you know, these things you never know. And you go out there and you have an idea. You go, this will be a killer deal. And you try it, and sometimes it works, and then sometimes it just bombs, you know. And
I wonder about things like, because I think there are some people afraid to take some chances. but might be missing. Might be missing something that could be funny. And listen, I'm not recommending to anybody listening to this. Oh, here's a great bit. No, I'm saying think about things like that. Sometimes, you know, great comedy comes from just thinking about it and trying it.
And it comes from a connection. You know, I did a thing a couple months ago with Air Ambulance. They fly the helicopters, and they do this all over the country, largest air ambulance facility in the country. So they're all about the ambulances and the helicopter rescues and everything and stuff. And so we were doing a bit on stage, and they had their little favorite animals and stuff like that. And so I ended up stepping on one. On purpose. Well, of course, the gal just went into hysterics and stuff, you know? And I just looked at the one guy, said, quick, get a helicopter in here. And, I mean, he runs off. He's trying to find pilots. He's doing all kinds of stuff. But everybody in the audience, I mean, this was all stuff that related to them.
Right.
And it just tied it into their group so much more.
Yes.
So it's you know, what can I do about this group that I can take my act and my show or my bit and personalize it to them? That's where you make a connection, when they feel like this was done for them. I mean, and again, sometimes it's just a minor switch here or there, you know, that brings them into it, and then they even act even more because this is natural to them. They are doing what they would normally do.
Yes.
Dispatcher on the radio, quick, call this in.
That's exactly.
And people and doing stuff.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. You're personalizing it for your audience. And therefore, it's fun. It might not be funny to a regular person watching it, but to this group of people, they find it hysterical. So, as someone who books this talent, someone who has the ability to personalize the show for a group of people, boy, that makes them a really invaluable resource.
Oh, sure, because it just ties in really well. And again, as an agency, you know, we get feedback from the clients. This guy did this and this and this. And you start knowing, you know, who are my favorite people that I'm going to put, what kind of situations do I want to put them in and everything else. You know, and it's given me the opportunity to pay a lot of people a lot of money over, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know, I make money by helping other people make money. So, you know, I want to have good acts. I want to give them advice. I want them to learn from my experience and everything else, because ultimately the show is going to go better, the client's going to be happier, they're going to call me back and say, hey, Brian, next year the conference is going to be moved to Joplin, or next year it's going to be in Kansas City, or, you know, wherever. Can you go there? It's like, well, sure I can go there, you know? All the acts I book, none of them are, you know, they're all from all over the country. It just depends on what they want. So that's how we maintain, you know, our client base over the years. And so a lot of the business we do is repeats. And, you know, I have clients that just say, Brian, I trust you. You know my group. You know what will, you know, here's my budget. You know, go figure out how you can spend, you know, X number of dollars, you know. And that's what they're looking for. So, really, actually, I just hypnotize them all, and they just come back year after year anyway.
is it amazing? Do you find it amazing that in 2019, you're talking about, you know, booking all these acts and stuff, that there are still some stage hypnotists and still people who are out there working who don't? And by the way, anybody, if you're a hypnotist just starting out, a stage hypnotist, and you've heard some of these podcasts, I mean, I've talked to Salish and Rich Guzzi and Jim Wanden. And if you've heard these things and you're not considering using a booker, what are you listening to? Because all of these guys have talked about how important getting someone to take care of this end for you is. It's amazing that there are people who won't use anybody, though, right?
Well, you know, there's a lot of guys just, they think they know everything about everything, and they're just going to do it their own way, and it's like, good luck with that, you know? It's a lot of work. I have no idea, but to work with someone who always has the relationships built, with the venues or the properties or whatever, you know, man, that's, you know, that's golden. You can't hardly put a price on that type of relationship.
Absolutely.
And stuff. I started working with William a bunch of years ago when I was, you know, I was getting too many shows that I couldn't get to myself. And so I'm looking, well, who do I want to put in? And I ran across him, and we kind of started a relationship back and forth. And, you know, I'd call him up and say, hey, I've got another one. Can you find me somebody on this night? And I think the 27th, I've given him five or six shows to fill for me that night.
Well, yeah, think about, I mean, when you get to after prom season, just how busy stage hypnotists are. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that night is just, I've turned down so much work that night. And then, you know, talked to William. He says, well, I got all these guys coming in from all out of town. We'll take them. So I know I've given at least 5 or 6 jobs to some of the people that are going to be at the conference.
That's fantastic.
That'll be working for me, but they don't know they're working for me, but they're working for me through William.
You've been
and this will be the first time I get to go to the conference, so I'm excited about, you know, meeting some of the people and everything else there.
We don't have a lot of time left, but you've been doing it for a long time. Give me one of those memorable things that happened while you've been doing stage hypnotism.
Well, there's a couple memorable ones, but probably the most memorable one I get asked for the most is I was doing a corporate show and talking to the audience and just kind of giving ideas to the people behind me and just watching them react to the ideas. And one of the ideas is that, you know, while we were up here, I have to apologize. Everybody walked across the stage. Before you got here, they were cleaning the stage, and they were using a very, very strong solvent. And I think it's kind of eating through people's shoes. I've noticed that the people's feet up here are really getting itchy, and I know they want to scratch them. So what they're doing, you know, they're starting to reach down in, they're sliding their feet on the floor and stuff. Oh, you got to really just kick those shoes off and reach down there and scratch the bottom of your foot. It's really getting so intense right now. So they're kicking their shoes off, and I'm looking at the audience, and the panel of people are behind me. And you hear a level of laughter. It was one night, the level just like tripled. And I'm like, oh, something happened behind me. I got to turn around and look. And I turn around and look, and this guy had a prosthetic leg on. He had taken his leg off, and he had his foot up by his face. And he's just scrubbing the bottom of his prosthetic foot with his fingers, scratching it.
Yes.
Oh, man. I mean, I lost it. I'm like, wow, that's funny.
That's,
I mean, that was just,
that's,
oh,
golden.
My gosh. But, you know, that's a real thing. Phantom pain.
And
amputees, they go through this where, you know, they get a hand or a foot cut off and then they'll be complaining, my foot hurts. It's like, it's not there. No, it hurts because pain's registered in the brain. And even though the foot's gone, you can still have phantom pain in places. So it was very likely that he was still feeling that itching, burning sensation, even though that really wasn't his leg. But,
that's a great bit.
You know, Christian, you can never recreate that.
Yeah.
You know, that's a one-time deal.
Yeah, but that's, you know, to tell people that the floor has something that'll make, that's a great bit. I mean, I think that's hysterical. Listen, Brian,
I like to kind of get into the thing soft.
Yeah.
And just, you know, it's a conversation. I'm the director. I'm not the ta-da guy.
Yeah.
I'm not the, you know, a lot of times magicians will come out there and like, oh, that's so great. No, I'm just this guy. He's telling a story. I'm off to the side. And it's how the people interact with the story, and you weave in and out of, you know, different bits and stuff like that.
As a stage hypnotist, it seems like great. It'd be nice if everybody's walking out going, "Wow, that guy was so great," which is awesome. But I think it would be just the same as they walk out going, "That audience, those subjects were fantastic."
Yeah,
I mean, I guess as long as they're entertained, that's all that matters.
Yes, it is. It's, you know, and I used to worry at first about how deep are they going. And this, it's like, you know what? Did they laugh? Yeah. Okay, then it doesn't really matter how deep you were. I'm not doing surgery. I'm not pulling your tooth. So, you know, we don't have to go deep into hypnosis, you know, for a stage show. Did you laugh? Yeah. Then I succeeded.
Yeah.
And that's really what it's about, is having, you know, having people have some fun, you know.
And
if they learn something, that's even better.
You're going to be speaking at Heartland, and you're going to be talking about doing your show and how to make your show better, and he'll be giving you some tips. But I highly recommend, I don't know if you'll do a question and answer session during your presentation, but I highly recommend people taking time, especially you guys who don't use any kind of booking agents or anything, take some time, ask Brian some questions. I'm assuming you'll answer them, but ask Brian some questions.
Sure.
Find out about booking and ask Salish how hard it would be to get into colleges if he didn't have someone booking him in.
Oh,
there.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. There's
it
a lot.
It wouldn't happen.
Yes. It
would not happen. You don't come in as an individual and get booked into a college, into a state fair, into a corporate deal without coming through an agency.
Yeah.
Because they are not going to take the risk on bringing somebody in who's not proven. And an agency is not going to put somebody in who's not proven and lose their reputation either. So you've got to get in. You've got to prove yourself. There's no easy just open the door and walk in and I'm there. You got to pay your dues.
A lot of new stage hypnotists that are out there saying, well, I don't want to give up any of my money to an agent. Whatever. Listen, I'm telling you, you should really rethink it. Ask some questions because I'm just telling you, in any form of entertainment, it's worth any amount of money you give up to a person that gets you the job. And I'm not even a hypnotist. I'm just someone who's done radio and I play in bands and all that stuff. Trust me, it's worth every single penny. Brian, I've really enjoyed our time together today.
That's great. I'm glad you called. Glad we could do this. This was fun.
You're going to be at Heartland Hypnosis. You're speaking on which day?
I'm speaking on Friday. I'm actually just following Jim Wan. I think I'm like the second or third.
That's a nice lineup.
Got a real nice spot there Friday. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
It's Brian Powers. He's going to be at Heartland Hypnosis Conference on the 26th of April. Go on by, see him talk on the stage in the stage room. It's going to be awesome. And, of course, I thank you for talking about it, letting us know about booking, and I feel informed. And, by the way, I will share your story of a guy scratching his prosthetic, foot.
I wish I would have had it on video, Dave.
That is fantastic.
It was fun. Brian, we always are.
Brian Powers, I thank you, my friend.
All right.
This has been the Heartland Hypnosis Radio, and I'll talk to you guys next time. So long.